He lit another cigarette and walked with Mac past the shed and along a dirt road. Flory lived a mile away on her section of land, and these days Pete always went there on foot. The exercise was painful, but the doctors had told him that long walks would eventually fortify his legs, and the pain might one day subside. He doubted that, and had accepted the reality that his legs would burn and ache for the rest of his life, a life he was lucky to have. He had once been presumed dead, and had indeed come very close to the end. So every day was a gift. Until now. Today would be the last day of his life as he knew it, and he had accepted this. Flory lived in a pink cottage she had built after their mother died and left them the land. She was a poet, with no interest in farming, but had a keen interest in the income it generated. Her section, 640 acres, was just as fertile as Pete's, and she leased it to him for half the profits. When he arrived, she was in the backyard, walking through her aviary of chicken wire and netting, scattering feed as she chatted to her assortment of parrots, parakeets, and toucans. Beside the bird haven was a hutch where she kept a dozen chickens. Her two golden retrievers sat on the grass, watching the feeding with no interest in the exotic birds. He pointed to a spot on the front porch and told Mac to rest there, then went inside. Marietta was busy in the kitchen, and the house smelled of fried bacon and corn cakes. He said good morning to her and took a seat at the breakfast table. She poured him coffee, and he began reading the Tupelo morning paper. When Flory was finished with her birds, she came in the rear door, said good morning to her brother, and sat across from him. There were no hugs, no affection. To those who knew them, the Bannings were thought to be cold and distant, devoid of warmth and rarely emotional. This was true, but not intentional. They had simply been raised that way. Flory was 48 and had survived a brief and bad marriage as a young woman. She was one of the few divorced women in the county, and thus looked down upon, as if somehow damaged and perhaps immoral. Not that she cared. She didn't. She had a few friends and seldom left her property. Marietta served them thick omelets with tomatoes and spinach, corn cakes bathed with butter, bacon, and strawberry jam. Except for the coffee, sugar, and salt, everything on the table came from their soil. Flory said, "I received a letter from Stella yesterday. She seems to be doing fine, though struggling with calculus. She prefers literature and history. She is so much like me." Pete's children were expected to write at least one letter a week to their aunt, who wrote to them at least twice a week. Pete wasn't much for letters and had told them not to bother. However, writing to their aunt was a strict requirement. "Haven't heard from Joel," she said.
"I'm sure he's busy," Pete said as he flipped a page of the newspaper. "Is he still seeing that girl?"
"I suppose. He's much too young for romance, Pete. You should say something to him."
"He won't listen." Pete took a bite of his omelet. "I just want him to hurry up and graduate. I'm tired of paying tuition."
"I suppose the picking is going well," she said.
"Could be better. And the price dropped again yesterday. There's too much cotton this year."
"The price goes up and down, doesn't it? When the price is high, there's not enough cotton, and when it's low, there's too much of it. Damned if you do, damned if you don't."
"I suppose."
He had toyed with the idea of warning his sister of what was to come, but she would react badly, beg him not to do it, become hysterical, and they would fight, something they had not done in years. The killing
would change her life dramatically. And on the one hand, he pitied her and felt an obligation to explain. But on the other, he knew that it could not be explained, and attempting to do so would serve no useful purpose. Pete was not one to linger over food, especially on this awful day. He had been starved during the war and knew how little the body needed to survive. He chewed a bite of bacon, sipped his coffee, and listened as Flory went on about a cousin who had just died at 90. Death was on his mind, and he wondered what the Tupelo paper would say about him in the days to come.
"You're not eating much," she said, "and you're looking a bit thin."
"Not much of an appetite," he replied.
"How much are you smoking?"
"As much as I want." He was 43 and, at least in her opinion, looked older. His thick, dark hair was graying above his ears, and long wrinkles were forming across his forehead. The dashing young soldier who'd gone off to war was aging too fast. His memories and burdens were heavy, but he kept them to himself. The horrors he had survived would never be discussed, not by him, anyway. He shoved his plate away, his food half eaten, and finished his coffee.
"Always a pleasure,"
he said with a smile as he stood. He thanked Marietta, put on his barn coat, and left the cottage. Mac was waiting on the front steps. Back on the dirt road, he lengthened his stride and shook off the stiffness caused by half an hour of sitting. The sun was up and burning off the dew, and all around the thick boles sagged on the stems and begged to be picked. He walked on, a lonely man whose days were numbered.